These stories were collected in early February 2026, a week after Alex Peretti's killing in Minneapolis. They were edited days after the announcement that the Metro surge was ending. At the time of editing, ICE is still very active in the city and state. Even with a drawdown, Minnesotans are left with untold millions in damages, lost wages and losses to the economy, totaled vehicles, shuttered stores, children without parents or guardians, home repairs, abandoned pets, disruption in education, job loss and unpaid rent, looming evictions, and the ongoing trauma experienced by Minnesotans, regardless of race, ethnicity, and citizenship status.
Well, hello and greetings from Minneapolis and St. Paul, Minnesota. We're reaching out to you, our Anabaptist family near and far, because we fear that many people around the country aren't being given the opportunity to hear the lived experiences, the eyewitness accounts of what life has been like for us in Minnesota. Deuteronomy 10, 18 to 19 reminds us that God enacts justice for orphans and widows, and God loves immigrants, giving them food and clothing. That means that you must also love immigrants because you were immigrants in Egypt.
We are simply a group of deeply concerned Mennonite citizens. We're pastors, retirees, public health nurse, choir directors who want you to hear the truth of what we are experiencing firsthand every day in our community. In one moment, we are seeing extraordinary levels of cruelty and pain inflicted. And in the very next moment, we are seeing profound acts of bravery, compassion, and self-sacrifice from regular people of conscience, people like you, people like us, people like our next-door neighbors. We pray that you open your heart to what we have to share with you today.
This experience is just like nothing I've ever experienced before. You know, I grew up and I've learned my whole life that following Jesus means you love God and you love your neighbor as yourself. And we pray for our enemies. And that is the test that we here in Minnesota, and particularly in Minneapolis and St. Paul, we are being put to the test. Our local Mennonite church, Faith Mennonite Church, for probably about 6 years has been supporting a Honduran woman and her family who came to this country seeking asylum, did all the correct paperwork that she needed to do. She's followed every piece of what she's supposed to do. She supports herself, she pays taxes, and yet she is at risk for being deported. My husband and I own some apartments in Minneapolis, and we provide subsidized housing for people of low income. And this wonderful, hardworking family was just recently detained. And they're not criminals. They have no criminal background at all, but they have been detained. A Native American friend of mine was scheduled to have 6 weeks of daily post-cancer treatment at a local hospital. But I took her to her first appointment, and that day at that hospital, ICE agents had gone into the hospital and were interfering with what was happening at the hospital in terms of caring for patients. And she came out of her appointment and she told me, even though I need this treatment, I am not gonna go back to this hospital until this occupation is over, because local indigenous people, Native American people who are clearly citizens, have been illegally detained by ICE. I was invited from somebody else in our church to volunteer at a local food pantry to deliver food to the homes of people who are fearful of leaving their homes to get their food. And I know I find myself being fearful of, okay, I'm putting myself at risk here by even delivering this food to people, and I have white skin, but that's really what the level of what we're dealing with here in Minneapolis.
80% of our kids are immigrants, at least. That I'm underestimating there. Over 80%. So life in our school has completely changed. About a third of our kids, of our families, have chosen distant learning. The hallways are full with food and home goods that the mighty PTO at our little school has gathered, which is a lot because if 80 to 90% are immigrants, that means only 10% are not, and they have raised so much money for rent and for food and activities for our kids. It's just really incredible. You know, a lot of our kids that I see in my office every day are kids that are fearful that they'll go home and, they won't have a parent there anymore. They have to leave and come to school not knowing if, the last time they were going to see their parent was that morning. One day, one of the preschool teachers brought me one of the little girls, and her face will forever be etched in my mind. And said, "We don't know what to do. She's, hasn't been talking all day." And she just stood there with her two little arms right by her side and her big brown eyes, and this look that I can only describe as just a trauma. And she wouldn't talk. And give out so many hugs. And you can't say everything is going to be okay, but you can say that we love you and, we care. Daily. People putting their faith and beliefs in action. I've seen the community respond with like relentless love, protection, help. I'm a part of the buddy family. We were the PTO my kids' fam from a kids' school has created this incredible network. Absolutely boggles my mind how these networks are created and the section that I tapped into is to be a part of a buddy family. And we, somebody goes to get the food and drops them off somewhere else. And then I pick it up and, take it to the family and making sure that you're not followed, because, ICE has been known to follow, people from the grocery store, from these food shelves. The speech therapist at my school told me that last week her sister-in-law was driving to work. She wasn't involved in a protest. She was just driving to work and happened to turn down a street that was full of ICE agents. And she held up her hands in her car. And before she knew it, they busted out her window, cut her seatbelt, ripped her out of her car, took her to, I'm guessing it was the Whipple Building. And now she's on a federal no-fly list. She can't fly. And she didn't do anything. It's just literally driving to work. And she has a her daughter is in Germany, and now she can't go visit her.
And I'm going to also tell you about what's happening with children in a particular school district named Columbia Heights, which is just north of Minneapolis. There's a 17-year-old high school student that was on his way to school, was picked up by ICE agents, just driving to school, no parents present, and they just took him from the car and took him away. There was a 10-year-old girl in fourth grade taken by ICE agents on her way to school with her mom. By the end of the day, they were both taken down to the detention center in Texas, and they are still there. There's another 17-year-old high school student and her mother that were detained by ICE in their apartment. And in the one school that Liam is from, there are three students in immigration detention, and at least 25 families have a parent that's detained by ICE. And the administrators in the school district are telling stories of how ICE agents have been following students, following the school buses, coming into school parking lots. Schools and communities need to be safe places for children and families to thrive. These children are going to be suffering from the trauma of what has been done to them. Their classmates are living in fear, and they're also traumatized by the whole situation. And this affects their ability to learn now, and this is going to affect those students and children for a long time. I also have a story about a friend of mine who went to the site where Alex Pretty was killed shortly after it happened. He is actually a Vietnam War veteran and a retired VA nurse. He worked at the same hospital that he had worked at the same hospital where Alex Pretty worked. He was tackled by ICE agents and sprayed 3 times with pepper spray. He suffered numerous cuts and scrapes, a bruised eyes, and an injured elbow. He was handcuffed and taken to the Whipple building with an injury to his arm, bleeding all over the place, but was not given any medical attention. He wasn't even allowed to flush the pepper spray off of his face until about 3 hours later. After about 8 hours, they released him into the sub-zero weather without a ride or a phone. They tend to take everyone's phone away from them and don't give them back. There weren't any charges placed against him. They just let him out. There is an organization called Safe Haven, which is a bunch of folks that wait outside the Whipple building knowing that people are being released. And they have hot coffee, blankets, and burner phones, so they give them to people so they can call someone to come and get them. My friend was not able to reach his wife, so one of the nice people at Safe Haven drove him home. He is just one of many citizens who've been arrested by ICE for standing up for their neighbors and grieving about what had happened. Just last night, I had the privilege of meeting with a number of people who've been detained by ICE. They are either awaiting court hearings or possible deportation. A large number of these men came to the U.S. applying for asylum. They've opened cases. They've been doing what is required to receive documentation. They're working. They're just having normal lives. None of them in that group had any crime at all. One man was leaving his house with his wife when his car was suddenly blocked by two vehicles full of 7 ICE agents. They told him, "Get out of the car or we will break your window." So he did get out. He told them he had a work permit. They said that didn't matter. And they put him in handcuffs and took him away. And he is now in detention. Another man was in a parking lot in his apartment building helping put a battery in his friend's car. ICE came up and took him. Another had just stopped at the grocery store to get some food, and they took him off the sidewalk before he got in the store. Another man was driving with his 90-year-old father in a car, and the car broke down. So they stopped on the edge of the road. He got out, was trying to figure out what was to do with about the car. And some ICE agents came, grabbed him, and took him away, and left the 90-year-old dad in the car that was broken down on the side of the road.
We want violent criminals off the street, but what we are seeing every day is violence at the hands of federal agents. While they are probably detaining some violent criminals, we're watching so many innocent, peaceful, contributing members of society taken, and their families and their lives ripped apart. Legal residents, lawful asylum seekers, even U.S.-born citizens. Statistics shared by the DHS even show that criminals are the minority of those who are being detained in this ICE surge. If removing violent criminals is truly the objective, there must be a better way to do it. I'm haunted by the picture of a woman. She looked to be in her 50s, possibly Ecuadorian, with a winter hat on and a look of just stunned dread in her eyes as she looked at the camera. She was abducted from a bus stop in the middle of the day. Thankfully, there was at least one person there, a citizen observer, brave enough to document her disappearance. One moment, she's sitting there waiting for her bus. The next moment, ICE drives up, approaches her, and in a matter of seconds, she is gone, vanished. No one present knew who she was. No one knew if there was a family member or an attorney or an employer that needed to be notified. Even now, I don't know if she ever made it home or if she's locked in a cell in Texas. Was she the mother to any of the numerous, numerous underage children who are now living alone and in hiding because their parents never came home? Did her husband, her mother, her sibling have just a pit in their stomach that night when it was clear that she wasn't coming home as expected. Citizen observers, the very ones who are being accused of causing harm or obstructing justice, these citizen observers are kind of the only chance for a woman like this. Observers send the footage to local immigrant rights and legal defense organizations, who then try their best to find out who the person is, where they've been taken, and how they can help. I just keep wondering who was waiting for this woman at home. And I wonder if they will ever see her again. My friend Maria is a family practice physician here in the Twin Cities for 26 years. And these are some of her thoughts. None of our Spanish-speaking patients, 60% of our patients, are coming to the clinic. None of them. Last week, I saw two youth, ages 16 and 12. I took care of their mother when she was pregnant with both, and have seen them their whole lives. They were brought in by one of their teachers, as their parents are not leaving home. The teens are scared and worried for their parents, such that it is hard for them to think of anything else. I wonder how this will affect generations to come and their mental health, their fear. We phoned in mom and dad so they could be present for the visit. Later, I visited the family home to bring medicine, and mom pulled me aside as I was leaving, asking if I knew of any sources to help with rent. Rent, food, safety, medicine, respect, welcome, all of these are components of health. I believe in the teachings of Matthew 25:40. That we are charged in this life to care for the sick, the hungry, the unhoused, the stranger in our midst, and in this way we serve God. This is perhaps the main guiding principle in my life. The health of our entire community is being threatened here. I have worked my whole life in this community, that they would be seen as anything other than beautiful human beings with the same hopes, desires, and character as me is so painful to me. And it's taking its toll on me and other healthcare workers as well.
I have been asked to share words of a member of a Mennonite congregation here in the Twin Cities. I am brown, a Mennonite since birth, born in Indiana, and worked for the U.S. government on multiple occasions in my working life. I live with a new reality that walking out on my streets is now shrouded with suspicion. Today, when I walk out the door to get to my office, I am already seen as guilty until proven innocent. The irony can't get any more clear. Where our country is based on a rule of law that states the contrary, innocent until proven guilty. When I am on the streets, waiting for the bus, my eyes are busy scanning my environment for any black vehicles who have already apprehended brown-skinned U.S. citizens in our city. How did my world come to this, where my, quote, imperfections become reasons for apprehension, violence, and alienation? It is an anxiety-ridden city. Though I am encouraged that Jesus visited, included, and saved the Samaritan woman by the well, John chapter 4. Unwanted and imperfect by their society's standards. Jesus, however, still made her whole. My silent prayer and saving grace as I traverse the weary streets of the Twin Cities is to be reminded and seek that God's good news for me is continuously revealed as a gospel of imperfection.
So our church follows the lectionary schedule. So this past week, I preached on a passage from Paul's first letter to the Corinthians, the first chapter. And I think one thing that has struck me about living in the Twin Cities through the last couple of months is a sense of hostility directed towards us, and a sense of, I guess, maybe a lack of accountability for people with a lot of power, and feeling, I guess, helpless in the face of that in many ways, especially with, people who work for the federal government coming into our cities with masks over their faces. We have no idea who these people are. So it feels very powerless for a lot of us. And the passage from 1 Corinthians was just so relevant to our current moment, where Paul is talking about, I guess, the world's wisdom and the world's versions of power, but calling the people in the Corinthian church to remember that God's foolishness is wiser than human wisdom, and God's weakness is stronger than human strength. And that gives me a lot of, I guess, a lot of hope right now, because it doesn't feel like we have a lot of human power. What has given me hope recently is seeing community members come together, support their neighbors who a lot of the times we don't even know them. This is the way that we get to know them, which is really interesting that this is actually, I feel like God has turned this into an opportunity, but it has clarified what our call is as Christians in this moment. So in a kind of perverse way, it has turned out to be a gift. But some of the things that members of our congregation have participated in are our church is in a neighborhood with a lot of Somali immigrants. And there's an Islamic center close to where we meet, and they had some gatherings there, and actually a call to action where people were showing up on during Friday prayers to look out for ICE agents so people could feel a little bit safer coming to pray on Fridays. And one thing that struck me going to that kind of watch on one of those Fridays was the it's such an interesting mix of a threat, but also joy in the midst of that, and people coming together, talking to each other. And that evening, there was a community gathering at the mosque, and I was really heartened by the turnout to how many people showed up to that. And people were bringing diapers, baby formula, because people are scared to go out and get these stuff for their kids, even though they're here legally. We've heard that. It would, I guess it's been heartening to see people come together in a dark situation. I guess this is a time where the church's call is clarified. And I would hope that we as Anabaptists can come together to obviously love our neighbors, but also to remember that God's weakness is stronger than human strength. And that's where I'm getting hope from these days.
An action that I was able to be part of yesterday that was called the Singing Resistance. And it was a singing action where there was between 1,500 and 1,600 people that came together to sing. It's such a powerful form of community and worship, honestly, and beauty. And this action in particular was described to us as this is an action where we want to call in the ICE agents, the DHS agents, call them into our community. And I wanted to just read the Martin Luther King's six principles of nonviolence. There's two principles that I felt like we were hitting yesterday. Principle two, nonviolence seeks to win friendship and understanding. The result of nonviolence is redemption and reconciliation. The purpose of nonviolence is the creation of the beloved community. Principle three, nonviolence seeks to defeat injustice, not people. Nonviolence recognizes that evildoers are also victims and are not evil people. The nonviolent resistor seeks to defeat evil, not people. And that was repeated multiple times yesterday as we learned the songs and as we sang them. And right now I can't remember any of them necessarily, but they were that was the theme of all of them, was the idea that we were singing to, we would then walk through downtown Minneapolis and we sang towards the hotels that we know many agents are staying at, with the message and the feeling of you know, you are not the actions that you've been asked to do. You are part of our community. Can you join our beloved community? You might not join us today, but maybe you'll join us tomorrow. And that there's a place for you amongst this beautiful community that we have here in Minneapolis. So I thought that was exactly what I needed in terms of kind of that heart healing with all the anger that has been here, which is righteous and justified anger, and the fear that has been here, to also sit with and experience that love and that the power of singing with many other people and many other voices. This is from a Twin Cities area physician that's been in practice here for many years. I visited a person at home yesterday who's been at home for the last 2 months without going out. She was very worried about her health. There was a picture up by her bed where I examined her husband, and their young son in their arms, with the dad giving a thumbs up in the photo. It was printed big on canvas, and it was the main adornment in their bedroom. This family is part of an evangelical church of Ecuadorian immigrants, and I've also given them rides to their church celebrations, the last one being in late December. The church has been closed since. There was not a lot I could do for my neighbor at that home visit, but listen and promise to connect her to clinics and help with rides there so she could feel less afraid. When I got home, this text message awaited me from her in Spanish. I'll translate for you here. Thank you for listening and understanding my pains and your help that you are giving me. Thank you. Looking at that picture in their home, I could not help but think of my own four grandparents, two of whom came from Germany, two from Ireland, all from poverty and situations of hardship. I thought about what picture they had up in their homes, how their hope for a life of peace and opportunity truly are not different from those of this family. And I thought about how they were not persecuted or searched out in home-to-home searches or pulled out of their cars or taken off the streets of Chicago, and that I am here because they were not.
I am a member at Faith Mennonite Church, and I'm also a chaplain. As I risked arrest with 98 clergy on January 23 at the airport, it's not okay for our neighbors to live in constant fear. And with the arrest that I experienced at the airport with these other clergy, it was a blessed day in many ways, because we were singing together, we were praying together, we had goodwill amongst each other. It was incredibly cold, I think 30 below with the wind chill, but we knew that it was possible that ICE agents would come, but they did not to the airport. So we were very professionally tended to by airport authority, police from Bloomington and Hopkins and Richfield. They were kind to us and were, I think, trying to show us a very clear distinction between professional police officers and ICE agents. It was in some ways a joyful experience. My husband and our children, 22 and 16-year-old, were at that protest, and I could see them at the sidelines, and that gave me that much more courage. I think we felt joyful to be a part of a city that cares for our neighbors But the very next day, Alex Preddy was killed less than two miles from my house. And it was just a very disheartening day. This battle, which is very much a spiritual battle, is far from over. And we do celebrate what we might call victories when they come. But there are evil forces at work. And I'm really thankful to be among other Christians, to be among other nonviolent Anabaptist folks who believe that we are responsible for each other.
I've just been really amazed at the ways in which our congregation has really come together and taken seriously our discipleship in responding to this moment, and taking seriously our call to love our neighbors. Of course, anger, certainly. Many people are angry, and but also peaceful. I've been amazed at this, just the response of the city of care for neighbors present in our cities, and of course not everyone shares the exact same convictions that we may, but really the response of people in contrast to media reports has overwhelmingly been nonviolent, and I really have to respect those, including some in our congregation who assume personal risks in being observers and being on part of neighborhood networks that are watching for ICE and ready to record actions, because that recording is a constitutional right and is how we hold officers accountable. The facts on the ground, what we are experiencing, just does not bear out the official narrative that the government kind of gives for the reasons for this ICE surge. But at the same time, this is a time when we experience new moral clarity about what it looks like to follow Jesus, what it looks like to serve vulnerable and marginalized communities, and find Christ among the people who are experiencing pain.
Thank you for hearing us today. I believe we have hope. I have hope. And we have faith that change is possible. But if you are watching this, we need your help. We need the help of Christians across this nation, Christians who believe that there must be a better, more humane path. So we ask two things of you. We ask that you please share our stories with your loved ones, share this video. Do not look away. Please do not look away. And secondly, please call your representatives. Those are the people who have the power to reform what is broken, but they will not act unless people like you demand it. So please, if what is unfolding in Minnesota feels wrong to you, if it's a violation of your faith and how you believe people should behave, and if you don't want this to reach your community, then please speak up. Speak up. Thank you for your time. Thank you for hearing our prayer. Thank you.